So I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy to be in some statistical talks. I was a bit bored yesterday, so today has been very good. Okay. So I'm going to talk about different things a little bit on the quick way, because this is a big project that we have been doing. I'm going to talk about some of the statistical properties that we have to estimate non-additive effects in linear mixed models. And in this particular case, what I'm doing is I'm incorporating some of the molecular information, expecting that the molecular information will improve the statistical properties of what we are doing. Okay, so let me see, I have a mouse. Okay, so we are dealing with the quantitative traits. So maybe I move somewhere. We're dealing with a quantitative trait. As you know, if you're not very familiar with this, we always try to separate or split the variance, the components into different variance components. We have the genetic, the environment, and some other ones. But the one I'm going to be focusing is on splitting the genetic component into their additive effects, dominant effects, and epistatic. And usually we call dominance and epistatic as the non-additive effects. That is the ones that we're going to be using. And in this particular case, we have several theory behind for linear mixed molecular effects with the small effects, so we'll be using some of the molecular approaches. And the most known right now that's very popular is the genomic selection, which is actually uses all this molecular information to predict a response through a linear combination, and in this case it's predicting a breeding value or predicting a phenotype. So we use the molecular information to predict of individuals we haven't really observed. I'm going to be focusing in the genomic blab, which is actually an extension of the typical what we call PBLAP, the pedigree blab, which uses all the framework of the linear mixed models. The reason why we prefer the genomic blab is because, besides being equivalent to a rich regression method, if you're familiar with the genomic selection methods, actually allows me to use all the framework of the linear mixed models in terms of unbalance and other things. There's several methods of genomic selection, and they all are very similar in terms of quality. So a GBLAP is one of them that we use. But I like it because it's in the context of linear mixed model. So what we do with the GBLAP, we start with the phenotypic blab or the pedigree-based blab, and where we have this matrix of relationship, which is a matrix of correlation between different individuals, and that's based just on expected values. And we're going to replace that by observed relationships that are based on molecular data. And when we do that, we expect that the model will give me better properties, because in one fact, I'm really observing the relationship that I have. But in statistical terms, I want to be able to split the terms better, and in one sense, and having more orthogonal one from each other. And that's what I want to try to evaluate on this case. We have an example there, but I'm just going to focus on the model we usually fit. We have this matrix algebra linear model, where we have some fixed effects, some random effects of the sign. And I have the A and the D, which is the additive effects and the dominant effects from these individuals, from the individuals we want to predict for. And they have the assumptions of different variance components, and we will be using the AG, which is the genomic matrix, or we'll be using the expected value matrix, which is the A, on the case of additive effects, and we'll use the D and DG in terms of dominance effect. Now, this model often is fitted without the third component, which is the D3D, which means you don't leave, you won't put the dominance effect, because most of the breeding progress only focuses on additive effects. And our hypothesis is that you should really put it in there, because otherwise you are not being able to estimate very well the additive effect, even if you don't care about the dominance effect. And recall, the dominant effect is the interaction between two individuals. Sometimes it's the cross effect or the family effect. So what's our objective? Take over the world. Okay. Our objective really is I want to evaluate the statistical accuracy of GBLAP, and if it really allows me to estimate variance component and additive and dominance effects a little bit better, depending on the conditions of which matrix do I use. And I want to see also if the additive effects improve when I add the dominant term, or I don't add the dominant term, and how do I add that dominant term, okay? Regardless of you caring about using it or not. And as we were doing this process, we realized we need to generate some of the software and the code to estimate this effect. So we generate a software with some of the algorithms. So I'll just talk briefly about it. So we have a population that we have to simulate. This is the nice thing about it. We're simulating everything. We have 5 chromosomes. Each chromosome has around 1,000 markers, 100 QTL simulator in each one. We generate 1,000 generations and let it evolve and multiply and cross and so on. You can see more details in the paper that I have at the end. And we selected 20 times 100 males and 100 females, and we cross them with each other. Now, each male is crossed with 3 females, and each female is crossed with male. The reason why I mention this is because that's a very good crossing, that we have. It's actually a circular diallel, and it's known to be good to estimate dominance effect. Okay, and then from each of these 300 families, we have 10 offspring, so we have a total of 3,000 individuals with a total of 5,000 markers. Okay, and we simulated different scenarios. The scenarios are with a heritability of 0.2 and 0.4. I'm only going to talk about the 0.4. And on top of that 0.4 heritability, we have different dominance ratios of 0, so no dominance, but sometimes we can still estimate it. We have the second scenario is a 0.1 dominance, and the last one is d squared equal to h squared, which means a 0.4. So we have a strong dominance, weak dominance, and no dominance. You probably haven't seen this one, but this is the old expressions that we use to calculate the additive and the dominance genomic matrix. There's different ways. There's a little bit two variants, and there is also papers that explain how you do it and so on. So I just put it a little bit more complete. So let me go back to the original model that we were fitting after using all these simulated data sets. We have all these scenarios with heritability and dominance, and on top of that, we fitted different models. Some of the models have only additive effects, the first two, and some of them with pedigree base and some with marker, and then we use some mix of both of them to see what happens when you put one model on the other and see how you estimate. We use MATLAB to generate the simulation. We use the software genome matrix to get all the molecular matrices, and ASRemoR to fit the model under the context of GBLAB. Okay? So a few of the results. There's a lot more results in the paper. And the first thing I want you to see, well, we have different heritabilities. I'm going to focus on these two columns. And there's no heritability on the first one, 0.1 and 0.4. I want to focus on the last one, and particularly in these two elements here. You can see when you have high heritability and decide not to fit the dominance effect, when you have dominance effect of 0.4 and you decide not to put it into your model, you get a bias on your additive effects, which the consequences for that is that your gain is going to be more than what you expect. So that means you are actually having a really upwardly biased estimation. The other thing that happens is once you add A and D, most of the models, when there's a clear dominance, you get a very good estimation of the A and a very good estimation of the D, and particularly this one is very good where you have a genomic A and you have a pedigree-based D matrix. For whatever reason, and I know the reason, but you have that combination is better than when you use both of the molecular matrices. What happens there is that when you have a pedigree-based D and a molecular-based A, you are more able to disentangle. These two metrics are less correlated. So that gives you a little bit better precision in terms of the variance components. Okay? Now, the other thing that I found very interesting is that the dominance effect, in this case, on the first scenario, there's no dominance, but we still estimate it. And we obtain something, which is actually not what we want. We want those values to be close to zero. So when you don't have some dominance and you estimate it, you're actually biasing your heritability and you're getting something that is actually just overfitting. Okay? So you have to be careful. This is for the partial data set where we only fit 1,500 and the results are very similar, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. Now, in terms of correlation between the true values and the predictive values, we have the simulation so we can really compare those things. There's lots of things here. Let me see first on the full data set where we have the 3,000 individuals. You can see as the heritability, as the dominance increases from scenario 1 to scenario 3, your correlation of the additive effects go down from 0.78 to 0.72. So that means you're getting worse predictions when you have this dominance. So it's difficult to disentangle them both. However, these correlations are very good in general. Okay. Now, what happens with the dominance? You get very good predictions on dominance, and this in part is because this experiment is very good. These two values of 0.3 for low dominance and actually 0.65 for a high level of dominance. So we are able to predict, in this case, we're able to estimate this dominance pretty good. And when you compare the additive and the dominance together, you have correlations of up to 0.9. The reason why we did these two together is because sometimes you cannot separate the components, but when you sum them up, you get better results, even though you cannot separate them very well. So this is a clear expression that, well, it's working well for additive effects, it's working well for dominant effects, and it works well for the sum of the both effects, with correlation of up to 0.9. This is very relevant if you work with hybrids or clones. Now, the partial data set gives me still very good correlations, and you can see there is a slightly lower. This is only 1,500 observations that we used to fit the model, so I'm surprised how good it goes. Now, the validation data set is a true validation. We only fitted the model with 1,500 observations, and then we predict what happened with the other 1,500 observations for which we don't have any original data. So it's a validation from this population. And there is a few things. One is very important, you probably already know. When you use the molecular data, you get an increase on the correlation instead of using the pedigree-based information. This is very typical, 6% in this simulation. As you see a drop on the correlation, as the same as we saw before. But the main striking element here is that for a validation, we are not able to predict the dominance effects. What happens here, the correlation of 0.15 or 0.25 tells you for these individuals that I don't have any observation, I'm predicting their dominance, and I can't really get anywhere close to them. And this experiment is a relatively good experiment, and that means you have lots of difficulties to estimate this dominance effect. So in one sense, we almost have to say we need a different data set, a different condition to improve the estimation of dominant effects under the context of genomic selection. Now, you have also a drop on the correlation on the total genetic values because the dominant ends up being just noise. So when you calculate the correlation, you're summing to these two components, and the dominance is mostly noise than anything. Okay, those are our main results. Sorry. I want to talk a little bit, because this is also about bioinformatics, about the genome matrix. It's a software we generated where we have a very easy way to get the pedigree information, get the pedigree matrices. So it reads the molecular data and produces not only the additive and dominant matrices, but it produces also the epistatic matrix if you want. And also you get the inverse. So this, in one way, what this is doing is just accelerating the implementation within ASReml or another software of the GBLAB. So that's a reference at the end. If you want to download it or check it out, still lots of things that can change. So in summary, so what I want to mention is, yes, when we incorporate the dominant effects into the model, we get improvement onto the model and improvement on the additive effects. The improvement is not very good, but there is an improvement. And it's more relevant, the improvement, is when you have dominance effects. So you have to include it. Even if you don't care about the dominant effects, the improvement on the additive effect is significant. Now, when you know the dominance effects are not relevant, you leave it out. So the molecular data has been able to split and improve the properties of this model. Now, the other thing that is important is which model do I use? And the combination of a genomic A, which a pedigree-based D, is the one that gave us the best results. Okay, in this particular case. And that one really allows you to split the model a little better, have less bias on the components, and so on. Now, I'm going to skip that one. Finally, just a few of the extensions, because this is obviously on progress. We found on the implementation of these several issues. One of the issues is when you calculate these genomic matrices, you need an inverse at some point, and often these matrices have negative eigenvalues or determinant very close to zero. So what do? You have to try to get really unstable matrices. And we have thought about a few of the elements, the bending and blending, but we are not sure. So this is something to explore in the future. How do you get the inverse of these matrices? And what the effects are on the prediction of the breeding values or the additive or dominant effects by changing these matrices. These models can be easily extended to epistatic effects. So there you can use the Hadamard product and get the matrices molecular-based or pedigree-based. You can do that. However, don't expect too much. And this is something we have to explore. We already had issues estimating the dominant effects. So we're going to have more issues estimating the epistatic. But I think this is the way it goes when we want to try to make the model a bit more complex under this framework. Another big challenge is the data. I have used thousands of markers. We'll have millions in a couple of years. How do we just read the data and produce this matrix? And also, we'll have more and more genotype individuals. So now I just want to read my A matrix of molecular, and it's going to be of 20,000 by 20,000. I'm sure R won't be able to read it. Okay, I have had that problem before in my laptop. Okay, so those are challenges, and we have to decide how do we approach them. There's alternatives that I'm just thinking out loud, and we can have further discussions later, and I'll be happy to talk. We'll have to make some sampling of markers. We'll have to do approximations of the inverse. This is open to different, like, statistical matrix algebra theory. Okay? Finally, I just have to thank the funding. We have some funding for this for a postdoc from our university, the School of Forestry, and the Agronomy Department. horticulture department. And if you want some more information, that paper should be out in a month or so. Okay? Thank you. Yes, we have tried that actually, but in a different data set. The question is if that Gianola has used the kernel methods for genomic selection to estimate different matrices, and not only the additive, also the dominance matrix and so on. And yes, we have tried. I did it in a strawberry data set, and does give very good improvements. And it was only one variable, only one data set, and so it's another approach that we can use eventually.
Thank you.